Okay, that's probably enough.
Okay.
Right.
Are we gonna do the intro?
Yeah. But we're doing the new intro.
Okay.
Because you were like, they're gonna get tired of the old one.
Yeah. Alright. So we're going welcome to
My Girlfriend Would Magically Read Too. Yeah. Excellent. Okay, cool. So yes, this is My Girlfriend Begrudgingly Reads Dune. I'm the boyfriend, Sean.
I'm my own person, Caitlin.
Who's also a girlfriend of me.
Sure.
Although you don't like that terminology. And that's okay. I'm trying to look
just
for
like
the...
Just like to be my own person.
I like for you to be your own person. I'm looking for... Oh yeah, here we go. The beginning of the chapter.
Just diving right in here? Just no foreplay?
Oh, you wanna do some rigmarole? All right, how was your day? How did you do today?
I don't want to talk about that.
Okay. What about the episode of Lovecraft Country we just watched?
I wasn't really paying that much attention.
I had a feeling. It was pretty trippy.
Yeah.
There appeared to be some sort of, apparently, interdimensional travel between different, you know, the many worlds theory.
I like that show, but as I've said to you before, I don't really have much interest in, like, trying to actually follow the plot of it.
Yeah, it's pretty complicated.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot going on, a lot of themes.
I'm like into what's happening, like moment to moment, but mm-hmm. I just don't really, not really like tracking on how it's all coming mm-hmm. together.
You're just kind of letting it play over your eyeballs, like a, what do you call those things that you let play over your eyeballs?
Dice.
Yeah, you're like just letting it eyeball dice roll over you, in that way that they do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Snake eyes.
Yeah. Boxcars.
Sevens.
Yo, 11. Eight. Easy eight. New shooter.
Tennyson. Alfred Lord.
That's a different thing. It's my grandfather's thing. My grandfather, for the listener, he has a special nickname for every card in the deck, because when we play seven card stud showdown, he always deals and he always has a special word for everything. So for tens, he goes, Tennyson, Alfred Lord. For seven, he goes, a Simny Czech, which I think has something to do with being Czechoslovakian. And then my favorite is when a four rolls up, he goes, 40 days and 40 nights, we lived off Helgrimites.
Yeah, and then you thought you saw a Helgrimite in the river.
I think I did see a Helgrimite in the river, yeah. Hmm. Or some kind of aquatic, you know, underwater bug.
Yeah.
That was definitely an insect of some sort. And I think they have like those kind of like lobster things where they have a lot of little flippers along their tail.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I think I saw
a crawdad.
Sure. I mean, what's a crawdad but a small lobster?
Right. And what's a lobster but a large aquatic bug?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
Somebody was like on the internet being like, lobsters, that's just a big bug. You're eating bugs. And I was like, well, if bugs taste delicious,
yeah,
then fine. And I've eaten bugs.
Yeah. Chirps.
Yeah, I've had chirps.
And mealworm jerky.
Mealworm jerky? Mealworm jerky? Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Or mealworm bacon.
Yeah, it was bug bacon. Yeah. So yeah. I've had that. And I will say that both of those kinds of bugs, both mealworms and crickets, taste a little bit musty. Mm. And lobster doesn't taste that way. So
yeah, lobster tastes delicious.
Whoever is like, you're just eating bugs, trying to like... I resent the idea that like just because something that's delicious is technically in some category
mm-hmm.
with something else that's like supposedly not delicious, that disqualifies it from being delicious. Like, you know, it's like, lobsters are gross. Who are you gonna believe? Me or your lion tongue? You know? It's like,
yeah.
I believe my tongue.
I mean, I think what I get really annoyed about is just people being really, like, you know, overwrought about bugs in general.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, just chill out. Bugs are all around us. They're fine.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are, like, not here to hurt you. I mean, I hate mosquitoes. I don't like getting I get bit like crazy. But, you know, if it's just, like, a bug in the world that's not biting you, like, mm-hmm. it's probably fine. You know, all these people who are like, oh my God, we have to keep all the flies off our food. Mm-hmm. I'm like, ugh.
Well, the flies are vomiting on your food and then sucking up the vomit.
Who cares? Whatever. Whoever died from that?
Mm-hmm.
Show me one person who died from a few flies landing on their food.
Probably millions of people who got dysentery over the years.
Yeah, but like that was like a bunch of flies and like rotting food, probably.
Well, I think it has a lot to do with open sewer systems.
Yeah, exactly. It's not because one time you were having cheese and crackers on your lawn and there were some flies buzzing about.
Yeah.
Show me one person who's ever had anything bad happen to them because of that.
Because of having a nice picnic on the lawn?
Yeah, with some flies.
Yeah. On the other hand, I think that sanitation is a big problem in the world, and flies contribute to the problem of sanitation.
But that's not what I'm talking about.
Okay, you're talking about a delightful English picnic with cheese and crackers.
Yeah, I'm talking about, like, you know, a fly every now and again. Mm-hmm. It's like this thing where people are like, oh, do you know how many poo particles you get on your toothbrush? Do you remember having this conversation at Christmas? And I was like, oh, you get so many poo particles on your toothbrush, blah, blah, blah. And my dad was like, I think people who die early, who think they die from poo particles on their toothbrush, are probably just dying from stress, of stressing out about there being poo particles on their toothbrush.
Mm.
And I think that's what it is. It's like, it's not actually the thing that's killing you. It's like your stress about the thing. It's not actually the thing that's making you sick. It's the fact that, like, you worry about that so much.
Sure.
I'm talking about really uptight people.
Yeah. Sure. Why not?
Not like, you know,
not places where they have serious sanitation problems.
Yes, you're talking about... not places. I'm talking about like Martha's Vineyard.
Okay. In Martha's Vineyard, probably you could just wipe your butt with your toothbrush and then go right after it and you'll be fine. Because, you know, you got the nice salt air. Otherwise, that's going to clean you right out.
I'm not talking about wiping your butt with your... Just show me one person who's ever died from poo particles on their toothbrush.
Yeah, I couldn't. I don't have records for that. I could not show you one person.
All right.
Well, I don't have a person to show you.
I think...
Am I supposed to just have corpses in my closet of people who died of poo particles?
I think all
and that's
logical...
That's the only sort of truth you'll accept in your life?
All logical fallacies aside.
Your freaking epistemology is unsustainable.
I'm pretty sure I've won this argument.
Okay. Were we arguing?
I was just arguing. I mean, I said all logical fallacies aside. Don't point out whether I was arguing with something real or not. That would be a logical fallacy included.
Muad'Dib tells us, in a time of reflection, that his first collisions with Arakian necessities were the true beginning of his education. He learned then how to pull the sand for its weather, learned the language of the wind's needles stinging his skin, learned how the nose can buzz with sand itch, and how to gather his body's precious moisture around him to guard it and preserve it. As his eyes assumed the blue of the Ibad, he learned the Jacobsa way. That's Stilgar's preface to Muad'Dib the Man by the Princess Irulan.
Yeah.
Do you ever think about, like, you know, Princess Irulan going around and being like, hey, Stilgar, could you write a foreword to my book? And he's like, writing? We know not of these things in the desert, for it is whatever. And she's like, all right. Just like, could you just type something up for me real quick? I mean, you don't have to make a big fucking thing out of it.
She's like, Stilgar, will you sign my yearbook? And he's like, have a great summer.
So Stilgar is just like, the real problem with Stilgar is that he wrote Have a Great Summer for everybody.
Yeah.
And he's just like not very imaginative with his like sign-offs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh, didn't you hate that when you were like, sign my yearbook, and somebody was just like, have a great summer.
I didn't get a yearbook the whole time I was in high school.
God.
I was a misanthrope in high school. Like, it was me and Hart and Eric and...
Just hating everybody?
Yeah, basically.
That was so not me in high school.
No,
like,
you loved everybody.
Like, oh my God, sign my yearbook. I made the yearbook all 4 years of high school.
No,
this is my yearbook that I made. You sign it.
Yeah, I was like, all right, let's go see a movie and make fun of it in the movie theater, and then let's come home and watch Mystery Science Theater so that we can, like, watch other people make fun of movies.
Oh, so you're not, so not that different from how you
No, it's pretty much the same. I'm still, I still like that.
See, I'm glad you just admitted that, because I do, I still maintain there's something in the way that you dislike things that's very high and mighty.
Yeah. I mean, but there's also things where I like things and can, and I'm also a fan of things. Dune, for instance.
Yeah, which I'm not that into, but if you're into it, whatever.
Yeah, and I say the same thing about stuff that you're into and I'm not that into.
That's not true. You shit all over things I'm into.
Like what?
Like Forrest Gump.
Well, Forrest Gump is... yeah, I do not like that show. I do not like that movie. I think it's has a very shitty message.
See? You're just proving my point. Can't you just be like, hey, that's cool that you like that. That's not really my bag.
I can be cool with it that you like Forrest Gump, but if asked my opinion on Forrest Gump...
I didn't.
Okay.
Do you notice how I did not?
Okay, I don't like Forrest Gump. You like Forrest Gump. You could like it. I think it's a fundamentally evil movie, but...
Oh, once again, did not ask for your opinion.
Well, fine. What was your opinion on this episode of Dune we read?
Well, let me tell you.
Okay, go for it.
It's just a baby boomer circle jerk. Whatever the fuck you say about Forrest Gump.
Yeah. I mean, at least you were listening.
Wait, did you move one of my thingies?
No, I didn't move shit.
All right.
Maybe I did. I didn't mean to. If I did.
So they all. So they're still.
This is Dune recap. Recap.
Stilgar the Horrible and the troops are still wandering about the desert, and then but then they get home.
Mm-hmm.
And home is really stinky. Paul loses Chani. Jessica's like, it smells like a bunch of things in here,
mm-hmm.
but she's trying to get Paul to accept that it's so stinky.
Because she doesn't want him to go around, like, squunch-faced all the time. Because it smells like, you know, just, it smells like hundreds of people who have no access to water to bathe with live in this cave and always close the doors to the cave, seal everybody in so no moisture can get in or out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the way they live, and so you can imagine.
Yeah, that sounds super nasty.
You can imagine it's a little bit ripe.
Yeah.
But she doesn't just smell that. She also smells, what, like, chemical manufacturing. She smells, like, I don't know, she's got a whole list of things she smells, and Stilgar's like,
paper,
whoa!
Plastics, chemical explosives. Yeah. She's basically just like, this smells like any, like, factory, because they all just make, you know, these days all factories are just making
paper plastics, and chemical explosives. Yeah, that's true. All the factories I've been to in my career, they definitely were all making explosives.
Yeah. Yeah. So then Paul gets, like, jostled to the front of the line,
mm-hmm.
and he meets Jameis's widow.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's a little surprise there about Jameis's widow, which is
That he gets to either claim her as his wife or his servant.
For a year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for a year. And then after a year, they can figure things out. But it's kind of like part of the. It's like part of the tradition that if you kill somebody, you get their wife for a year, and after a year is up, then she gets to decide what she wants to do. I think.
Yeah. I mean, I think I had a thought about something here, but I swear to God, you moved my things.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's fine. Boo, boo, boo. So, they're like, I don't know. Whatever. So,
this is one of those.
So, Paul.
Let me ask you this. The way you're doing the recap now,
uh-huh.
you're going to be done with it in about 2 minutes.
Yeah.
What in your mind are we going to do after you get through doing this style of recap that you're doing right now?
Hopefully talk about something else.
Okay. Is that... that's your plan?
I don't know. I don't have a plan.
Okay.
You're giving me too much credit. or not enough. I can't decide.
Okay.
All right. Well, we'll do the thing where you do you, and yeah. then I'll try to wring whatever content I can out of you.
Well, that. Here's my question. Mm-hmm. Like, why does... Okay, why are these the only two options, wife or servant? And, like, why can't he just be like...
Yeah, that's a great question. Let's talk about it.
Peace out. I want a different wife.
Right.
I mean, okay, so I think basically what it is like some real shitty form of child support.
Uh-huh. That's what I get from it, too. It's like, this person, what's her name?
Hera.
Hera. So, like, Hera is, you know, yeah, it's kind of a child support thing. It's like, Hera was in a partnership with Jameis. She was relying on him for support, monetary, I guess probably water in this case, and taking care of the two kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess the Fremen culture has that thing where it's like if the husband dies, the wife is, you know, assumed to be a little bit helpless, which I think is what was assumed, like, you know, there's that thing like in Deadwood, the TV show about the 1870s.
No, I don't know.
The main guy's brother died, and so he just married his brother's wife because that was like the thing that it was supposed to be the gentlemanly thing to do. It's like it's like, well, my brother was supposed to take care of you, but he died, and so now I guess I'll be your husband. And yeah. You know, we're not really going to talk about how you feel about that.
But it's kind of like the opposite of child support at the same time, because it's sort of like, imagine if your marriage died, and then, like, okay, imagine we were married, we had some kids, our marriage died,
mm-hmm.
and then I married some new guy, and I was just like, oh, these kids are just fully your responsibility now,
mm-hmm.
you know, yeah. like, that would be weird. I feel like, because in a real life situation, you'd still have to pay me child support.
Sure, unless I'd been killed by Kyle MacLachlan.
What? You didn't put our kids on your life insurance policy? What kind of monster are you?
Well, yeah. So, I mean, I think that this, you know, this is another example of this society is not, you know, all these kind of egalitarian ideas that we have or working towards now have just gone straight out the window. Yeah. Feudalism's back. So are, you know, these gender roles. So are, you know.
So also his mom.
And what Stilgar would say about, you know, this practice of taking the guy you killed's wife for at least a year, he would be like, you'll come to see that there's a good reason for doing this, you know.
Sure.
And it's like, is there really a good reason for that?
Yeah, right?
Right.
I
mean, she works in the freaking stillsuit factory and can mend stillsuits like a motherfucker. Like, can't she? Is that not a thing?
Yeah. So also, Jessica and Chani have gone to see the Reverend Mother
mm-hmm.
of this tribe or whatever.
Yeah.
And so Paul doesn't really know what's going on with them.
Yeah, they kind of flitted away while everybody's trying to get into the Setch proper.
Paul's like, listen, Hera. Oh, Hera's like, I'm young. Why don't you want me as a wife? Blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah. And Paul is like, listen, Hera, let's get one thing straight here. I just want you as a servant. And he uses the voice on her to stop her from, I don't know, being so petty mm-hmm. or something.
And she's like, he's witching me. And mm-hmm. Stilgar's kind of like,
uh-huh. Yeah. They go down like a mindfuck of passages with a mindfuck of passages off of it. And she's like, Paul's like, just take me to my room. And
mm-hmm.
so she's basically explaining all these things that are going on in the different doorways. Paul's like, why aren't you mad at me for killing your husband?
Good question, right?
She's like, I can't mourn him right now. I'll mourn him later.
But he also finds out that this is not the first time that, like, she has been passed from one dude to another. Yeah. Like, Jameis killed her first husband, but he was always a good provider, and he always treated the two kids, because she had a kid with the first guy. She always treated both kids. He always treated both kids the same, mm-hmm. you know, and it's like, well, you provide for my kids, that kind of thing. So in my mind, Hera has a lot of, she's, you know, this is, as Tina said, what's love got to do with it? You know, mm-hmm. She's worried about.
Oh, Tina Turner, not Tina Belcher.
I'm sure Tina, well, Tina, what would Tina Belcher say about love and having to do with it?
She'd be like, love has everything to do
with it. Yeah, she's a much more of a romantic. And hopefully, bring your zombie butt over here.
Yeah, right.
Kind of thing, yeah. But that's not Hera. Hera is...
She's very utilitarian about this whole husband thing.
Yeah, she's surviving.
So here's what I'm unclear on. Mm-hmm. Are the Sarduakar coming to hunt them? Are the Sarduakar... Are they planning for the Sarduakar to get there, like, tomorrow? Or, like, in a month? Or, like, in a year? I can't tell.
Because what he keeps going past is, like... everybody's saying... And Hera keeps saying, we're planning to leave. We are, like, leaving right now. And they keep passing places, like... Where like, people are still making stuff in the factories. They're still making these little beads
that they put around. Oh, yeah, those sound cool.
Yeah, they're little moisture catcher beads that they put around their
they're called dew collectors.
Yeah, dew collectors. Right, thank you. That they put around plants mm-hmm. that are real good at collecting dew at the night because they cool down real fast and cause the dew to condensate over them. So she's like, because we still want these plants to live, like, after we leave this place, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So they got to water themselves. But they're still making them, right? They're like, we got a quota to meet. And he's like, you're still producing this stuff as we're trying to GTFO? They pass by a room where there's a class going on, children are being taught. And he's like, school's in session while y'all are about to bug out? And mm-hmm. she's like, yeah, all this stuff is still, we still have a job to do. We still have goals to meet.
But then she says something toward the end of the chapter that makes it sound like they're not trying to GTFO immediately. But I can't remember what it is.
Okay, we'll look at it.
So here's my question to you. Mm-hmm. And we're about to come upon some serious design inspo.
Okay.
So I Excellent. Need your help understanding what's mm-hmm. going on with the design of this Sech?
Sech.
Whatever. Yeah. Something like that.
That word. Y'all be reading Dune. We know what we're talking about.
Yeah. So he keeps talking about the ledge. Like, the ledges. So do you think they're, like, in a hallway and then there's, like, these ledges, like, above them, and there's no talk of, like, stairs or anything.
Oh, I don't remember that part. I didn't get that.
He keeps talking about ledges over and over. Like, Paul glanced at the openings in the tunnel walls, seeing the heavy carpets on the raised ledge, glimpses of rooms with bright fabrics on the walls, piled cushions. People in the openings fell silent at their approach, followed Paul with untamed stares.
I totally missed the raised ledge thing.
They talk about the ledges several times.
Maybe every room is like got a kind of a raised step up.
It's like on a platform, but you can like see into the plat. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. So they put carpets on it. Maybe they like built a nice like plastic.
Yeah.
Plastic, like, floor to sit on. I'm saying plastic instead of wood because I think they probably don't have
any wood. I feel like the way they're describing these rooms is, like, your sort of stereotypical, like, Middle Eastern or, like, South Asian or something, like, harem.
Okay.
Where...
Lots of pillows around.
Yeah, pillows and, like, hangings, like, colorful hangings on the walls.
Oh, that sounds nice, yeah.
Yeah, right? It mm-hmm. sounds really pleasant.
Yeah, sure.
And the bathroom is called like a catchment room or something, which is gross.
Oh yes, there's a reclamation chamber.
Yeah, yeah.
For your needs and convenience and comfort.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's where you go and, you know, poop and pee and maybe scrub yourself off and all that shit, and then they reclaim all the water from it.
Yeah.
They squeeze it out like a sponge.
He feels like being with this woman is, like, one of the things that's going to lead to this jihad. Like, mm-hmm. he has a bad feeling about it.
Because, I think when I read that, I was like, what his worry is that he's within this very deep culture right now. And he feels it drawing him in. You know, he feels a draw to become part, you know, like any white kid does. And when they're in a new culture, they feel a draw to become part of that culture, you know. Mm-hmm. And so that's happening to them. But he thinks that like the key to the jihad coming is him becoming Fremen. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's like as his eyes get blue, as he starts to learn to pull the sand and flip around with sand trout, and you know.
What? I haven't read any of that yet. No spoilers.
He talks about pulling the sand and to get the sand weather at the beginning of the chapter.
Oh.
I just read it to you.
Okay. Here's the design.
I don't know what it means to pull sand to learn sand weather, but go ahead. Design inspo. Give it on. Lay it on me.
Paul nodded, joined her on the ledge. Again, the fucking ledge.
Yeah, ledge.
I can't believe you didn't notice the ledges.
I never noticed the ledges.
He lifted the hangings across from her, feeling metal fibers in the fabric, mm-hmm. followed her into a short entranceway and then into a larger room, square, about 6 meters to a side. That's pretty big.
Mm-hmm.
Thick blue carpets on the floor, blue and green fabrics hiding the rock walls, glow globes tuned to yellow overhead, bobbing against draped yellow ceiling fabrics. The effect was that of an ancient tent.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds pretty cool.
That sounds great. I think I skimmed right over that because I think that we just focus in on different parts of the story.
Yeah. They also have a room with cushions piled against the walls. It just sounds like very comfy.
Yeah, very comfy. So could you read this part right here? Because that's what I was just talking about.
You read it.
All right, fine. Yeah, Paul hesitated before joining her on the ledge. He felt a sudden reluctance to go to be alone with this woman. It came to him that he was surrounded by a way of life that could only be understood by postulating an ecology of ideas and values. He felt that this Fremen world was fishing for him, trying to snare him in its ways. And he knew what lay in that snare, the wild jihad, the religious war. He felt he should avoid at any cost. So that's what I'm saying, is like the culture is like pulling him in. And to him, the culture of the Fremen is tied to the jihad that's coming in the future.
Yeah, bro. Like, you know when you, like, study abroad and then you just, like, all of a sudden get a feeling that you're going to, like, be part of a religious war?
Yeah.
Ugh.
I felt that totally.
Oh, my God. Especially that time I did ayahuasca.
Like, one time I was, like, talking with this, like, old man on the subway and, like, he, like, said all these things to me. And it was in, like, Korean, so I didn't understand it, but, like, I just felt, like, such a connection. I was like, oh, maybe I'm really Korean, you know?
Yeah, totally, yeah, bro. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, wait, this is the thing where, hold on. Oh, yeah, this is the thing. Paul's like, you said we have to leave this seat. Shouldn't we be packing or something?
Right.
And Hera says, it will be done in its time. The butchers have yet to penetrate our region.
Mm-hmm.
And then she tells him that he doesn't have the eyes of the Iba. I thought she was saying you don't have blue eyes yet.
Yeah, I don't think he does have blue eyes yet.
It's strange, but not entirely unattractive. That's right. A little, what do you call it? A backwards compliment.
Well, yeah, I think it's a little flirty.
Yeah, and she's like, and he just keeps being like, get me my dinner, bitch, basically. Mm-hmm. He's angry at himself. He wonders where Chani is, because obviously that's his real crush.
And also the kids come in. Doesn't he see the kids?
That hasn't happened yet. I'm not there yet.
Okay.
He smells some kind of creosote bush burning, but it's still really stinky. So it's like, oh, that's where I wanted to put one of these things. Maybe it got moved from there.
I'm going
to
get you some more things. You can have as many little... You can have as many
just
tiny
move my
plastic
things.
Tabs. I didn't mean to. I think I maybe it come out and I was like, oh, I'll put it right back where it goes. Crap. Sorry, guys. I'll put it right back where it goes, but maybe it didn't go in the right spot. So
I just, two thoughts came to mind.
Okay.
One was like teenagers who like smoke pot in their rooms and then try to cover it up with like air spray or incense or whatever. And their parents like, are like, no.
Now it smells like incense and weed.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
The other thing was like when you guys used to light candles in your apartment.
Oh, right. Yeah. This is a real lipstick on a pig situation.
Yeah. Anyway, still super stinky in that siege.
Caitlin is referring to when I lived in
a
four-man dude coven in Brooklyn, New York, and it got a little ripe.
Although that being said, I was advocating for the candles because it was better than nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. So then he's like all up in his head. He's like, where's the poison snooper? She's going to bring me food. I can smell poison and like, you know.
So what does that say to you, the lack of poison snoopers, the lack of that sort of security, that sort of internal security?
I think it means that the Fremen have a very like trusting collectivist culture.
Yeah, that's what I got. You know, it's like This sitch is the kind of place where we don't lock our doors at night.
Yeah.
You know, we just sort of trust folks.
Yeah. But he's like, but we'll murder you if you're not one of us. Well, when he's talking about he can smell the poisons, that, again, feels to me like the fucking thing with, like, the flies or the arsenic and the brown rice or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like, did these Atreides ever really need all this poison snooping, or were they just being hypersensitive to mm-hmm. poisons, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point, because they got poisons. We know they got poisons in here.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that the Atreides and the Harkonnens are worried about one type of threat. And the Fremen are worried about a very different type of threat.
Yeah.
Like, the Atreides are in the Atreides and the larger Lansrod society that they live in of nobility, they're, you know, they have the same worries that any oppressive...
That they're going to lose power. That's their number one worry.
They're worried that people are going to rise up and kill them. The people they're oppressing are going to rise up and kill them.
And the people who are oppressed are just worried about being oppressed.
Yeah, it's they're not like, oh my god, some other dirt farmer is going to assassinate me.
Yeah.
You know, that's just not something they're concerned about.
Although it's definitely been a project of the white upper to middle class over the course of history to turn people of lower incomes against each other out of solidarity with each other. Mm. And that's why race was like invented partially. Mm, yeah. You know,
it's a good thing that sort of thing isn't happening in this day and age.
Well, it definitely is. But I mean, I'm just saying it's a project that's been going on for a long time and it's been very intentional.
And I was being facetious.
Yeah, I know. Then the kids come in.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, the kids come in and like the last sentence and they're like carrying weapons and they Paul's got little, like, oh shit, yeah, they have their own tiny little Christ knives.
They got little baby Christ knives.
Yeah. Should we get little Christ knives for the kitties?
Oh my god. Well, the kitties each have five little Christ knives on each
good
paw.
Point. That's true. Yeah. They even shed their Christ knives and grow new ones every once in a while.
Mm-hmm. Just like sandworms. Are the cats sandworms?
Ooh.
Wait a minute. I'm looking at the cat over there, and I'm noticing...
You are? I don't see a cat. You're doing a bit. Sorry.
That cat over... That one. Uh-huh. That, you weren't looking in the right places.
Yeah,
that one right there.
Okay, that one, yeah.
I'm noticing that it is actually 300 meters long and has no feet or legs, and is not striped, but just has one big mouth on the front and no eyes.
Oh, man. Is it drinking coffee and reading Dune at a... diner?
Oh, you really, that my the drawing I made really made an impression on you.
It was a cute drawing. Yeah.
I made a cute drawing of two sandworms in a diner drinking coffee and discussing Dune, which you guys can certainly see if you come and join MGBRD Worms.
Great.
Facebook group. Which I'm really like, I just created this Facebook group and I'm almost like, it's becoming very clear that Facebook is a fundamental evil in society and we should probably all stop using it.
Yeah.
But it's just so easy to make groups and everyone's already there.
Yeah, I hear that. But listen, so I feel like Paul sees these kids and he's like, oh yeah, these Fremen kids are supposed to be really ferocious.
Mm-hmm.
Which I was just having all these, like, flashes in my mind to, like, all these, like, step-parent movies, you know, like, Stepmom, or like, what's that one with Tim Allen and like
Jungle to Jungle?
Yeah, or like Man of the House with mm-hmm. Chevy Chase.
Yeah.
You know, all these movies where like the step parent comes in, they're like, ooh,
these kids.
Yeah. I hope you don't hate me.
Mm-hmm. Or you think he's like the mean rich new wife in the Lindsay
in
Lohan.
The Parent Trap.
In the Parent Trap, yeah.
Or, well, it's not just the Lindsay Lohan. There's also a mean rich new wife in the Old Parent Trap too.
And it, but well, what was the one that was with the Olsen twins and not?
It Takes Two.
Okay.
But that was like a different situation.
Okay. What's the one where on the commercial they put a lizard down her shirt and the lizard jumps in her mouth and she's like,
I the lizard's like flipping its tail around. That one's the Parent Trap.
Okay.
But in It Takes Two, it was that the Olsen twins were like separate daughters of different, no, hold on. One of them was the daughter of a rich guy,
mm-hmm.
and the other one was like an orphan who had like a, you know, savior lady in her life, mm-hmm. basically. And like the girls just happened to look a lot like each other. Or, like, exactly like each other.
Mm-hmm.
Not because they were related. I don't know why. But they, I think, conspire to get their respective guardians together.
Wait, so they're not identical twins separated at birth in that movie?
No, they're just two girls who happen to look a lot like each
other. But it's still the Olsen twins who are identical twins?
Yeah.
Not separated at birth?
Exactly.
That's stupid.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay. I mean, I really liked it when I was little, so.
Okay, well, I'm not saying you were stupid when you were little.
No, I
mean, not any more than anyone, because right. everyone's yeah. stupid when they're little. Kids are stupid.
That's why they need us to help them.
Yeah, and I'm not saying they're, like, kids are smart for being kids, but they're yeah. stupid for being anything else, which is not right. how they should be judged, obviously.
Right,
like, yeah. I don't judge the cats, like, I don't say both our cats are stupid because they're not as intelligent as an adult human.
Except for when Nico tries to go through doors.
No, Nico's stupid because she can't get through a door. And she tries to go sideways. Like, that's going to work. Anyways. Yeah. I
just want to clarify for the listener. We're talking about doors that are, like, slightly cracked, but not yeah. open enough for a cat to get through without some force.
Yeah.
And Nico does not understand how to apply
force. Yeah, she doesn't
understand
how to just push on it.
Yeah.
She's like, hey.
It's not like any doorway she, like, looks at.
Yeah.
Puzzled.
Yeah, she thinks Scout is like a freaking escape artist for just being able to use her body to push the door open.
Yeah.
Now, an interesting thing about these two kids is I cannot remember what becomes of them in the story. And, you know, like, I'm probably, as a 12-year-old reading this story, I was like, oh, this old lady's got kids. Well, they probably won't factor in the story. But, like, as an adult,
mm-hmm.
I'm like, what's going to happen with these two kids? Mm-hmm. This is a really big responsibility. Like, mm-hmm. Paul is just
he's only 15.
Yeah,
he's a kid.
Paul's 15. He just found out he's a stepdad to these two kids. Like,
but,
what's that going to
yeah,
be? That's
right.
a whole book in itself.
But does he have to be a stepdad if he's only taking her as a servant? Or does he just have to be, like, a child support?
Yeah, that's... Yeah, right? I don't know. I mean, well, clearly Jameis took the kid whose
yeah.
dad he killed, like... And was like,
oh, and Hera really sets him up there. She's
yeah.
like, well, Jameis
yeah.
loved all of these kids equally.
Equally, yeah.
yeah.
It was the same.
Yeah.
You know, so Paul's kind of like, hey, well, you know, yeah, I ain't Jameis. That's why Jameis is dead.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
But he doesn't like killing, and she's surprised to hear that.
Well, what would you do? Like, you come in, you just killed this guy, and you were, like, feeling
Why?
Ways about that.
I guess I have
because
to.
Because he called you out, he challenged you.
I
it's
have
the
to.
Rights of whatever.
Yeah.
And, so then you find out you've got these two kids, like, grown, like, almost, like, you know, 7 and 8 year old kids.
Honestly, I'd probably just be like, this is pushing on my boundaries. I need to go take a nap.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe go hit the reclamation chamber first.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good idea.
Otherwise, you're just going to have to wake up in the middle of your nap and go reclaim, and then you probably won't be able to get back to sleep.
Yeah, good point.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the shit these people have to go through.
Mm-hmm. It's tough.
I'd just be like, ugh, I'm done.
It's hard out there for a freeman. You know,
this is what I always say about, like, the zombie apocalypse. I'm always like, ugh, I'd just commit suicide. Mm-hmm. It just seems, like, way too stressful to try to live through a zombie apocalypse.
I don't understand the appeal of the zombie apocalypse. It's the worst apocalypse as far as I'm concerned.
What's the best apocalypse?
Mad Max.
Oh.
I mean, it's not good. There's still a lot of tough stuff that happens, but at least it's visually appealing.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did try to watch that movie because people told me it was, like, really feminist or whatever, and I was just like, ugh.
Oh, the newest Mad Max? It's
still an action movie.
Yeah, it's going to be too blank wall for you, I'm afraid. It's
so blank wall. I don't even, like, really remember anything about it.
Listeners, if you'll recall, any action scene that Caitlin tries to observe becomes a blank wall to her. She cannot process the visual information that she's receiving in an action scene.
Yeah.
So that's why we say blank wall. And that's why she's been so surprised recently with these two knife fights that have come up recently in the books. How engaged she was in the combat.
I think it's much more... Well, I don't know. It's more interesting to read about. I mean, I guess, like... Because one of the things I always say about action movies is I just sort of feel like the outcome of the fights is predictable. It's like the hero's gonna win and the villain's gonna lose and whatever, you know.
But
so I'm just
Frank Herbert does a good job of, like, giving you all these reasons why it's going to be very hard for our hero or the protagonist. You know, Fade's not a hero, but of course people would argue that Paul's not a hero either, and we can certainly talk about that after the book's finished.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's different. He does a good job of describing sort of the microcosm, the small details that are very important for the outcome of this.
That's true. It's like I said, it's like I'm invested in the emotionality of the fight.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't really come through in an action movie. An action movie, it's just like the visual.
Well, also we've spent, you know, by the time Paul got in a knife fight, we had spent 400 pages with him.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
Or maybe 300 pages at that point. I don't know. And same thing with Fade. Like, we knew so much about the Harkonnens and, like, what their deal was and, like, what was going on and all the characters involved.
I think my thing with that fight... My thing with that fight was I just didn't really understand what was going on the entire time in that chapter.
Mm.
I feel like the equivalent of blank wall for this book is like any Harkonnen chapter. It was like, ugh, I don't know. These people, I don't like them. I don't care about what's going on with them. Whatever. I'm just going to like try to get through this as quickly as possible.
That's interesting because I've always found the Harkonnen chapters very compelling. Because I guess I've never really thought of it's like... For the Harkonnens, they're clearly, they've got messed up things with them to our eyes, but their society has told them, you know, that they're doing the right thing. They're on the right track. You know, it's like, there's like, the Baron, even the Baron, he's never thinking to himself, I'm an evil bastard, or like, to him, nothing he does is even deviant or, like, wrong, you know? He abuses children because no one's ever told him he couldn't. You know, he he's concerned for his family. Like, he's concerned for his family and the legacy that he's going to leave behind, and, you know, the power, you know, where they relate to and the power structure and all that. But, like, that's what he's supposed to do. Like, that's
yeah,
that's
but
what
I feel
his...
like everything you just said about him is exactly why he's uninteresting to me. I'm like, oh, this guy has like no conscience, no like humanness to him that I can relate to.
Well, see, I guess I see he does have humanness in that, like, his motivations are very human.
Yeah.
And I've always been intrigued by his, you know, he sees the underlings around him as, you know, tools, but he's not, it's the idea that he's not like just killing for killing's sake is wasteful to him, you know? And so that's like interesting. So it's not, it's like, that's a definitely a big, that's a huge,
See,
that's
I'm
a
like,
huge component of evil, but it's not the sort of, it's not just like sadistic, and he is sadistic, but not in like a boilerplate way, I guess.
I'm tuning out this conversation. Right. I just have no interest.
Okay.
I have no interest in the Baron Harkonnen, anything he's up to, any of his family, whatever.
Okay. Never mind it. Well, don't never mind, but that's your perspective. That's how you get to feel about it.
Yeah, that's how I feel about it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this is what this conversation is making me think about is I feel like I'm kind of back to Sean begrudgingly reads the moviegoer.
Okay.
Because that book is just like so like up in the feels.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wonder what that would be like for you.
Yeah, it might be weird, might go over my head. Who knows? We shall see whenever we're done with Dune.
Yeah.
Unless there's a giant clamoring, of course. And then we'll have two podcasts running in parallel.
I don't think we're on track for the clamoring.
Yeah, you might be surprised.
We're not going to hit our third quarter clamoring projections. That's just my prediction.
We'll see.
Here, I made this chart. See this line? It goes... Psh, 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 psh.
Listen, we are not a rocket ship to the moon. Yeah. And stars, this podcast. What we are is a slow and steady increase in, you know, people appreciating what we're laying down.
We're a real tortoise.
Yeah, but who wins the race?
The tortoise.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Right. That's why the tortoise read Dune Messiah, because he got to the end of the race and there were enough people being like, yay, tortoise. Go on to
the
next
for
one.
The tortoise. I hope you enjoyed that. Mm. You cannot make me read another Dune book before you begrudgingly read something.
Sure. What about me begrudgingly reading something and you begrudgingly reading the second Dune in parallel?
No.
Two podcasts a week.
No. Cannot handle. Two podcasts plus you get two D&D games and an open mic every week. What the fuck do I get here? What am I getting out of any of this?
Okay. All right. Just one open mic? Dang.
Well, you can have more open mics, but I mean, like, what do I get to do that's fun for me?
Lay it on me. I'm ready to do fun things with you.
Good.
Okay. We'll do all kinds of fun things.
No, I don't want to.
All right. Well, you can just lie here and read Dune Messiah.
No, I don't want to do that either.
Okay. We'll do more fun things. Sounds like you're clamoring for. And so we'll update the people on the podcast with all the fun things we're gonna figure out that Caitlin wants to do.
I don't know. I guess they have to be fun things without you, because you have too much of a social life without me, so I need to find my own shit.
Interesting. Okay, well, you got circus.
Yeah.
And book club with your mom.
No, not anymore.
All right, we'll figure something out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, I feel like sad for you now for some reason.
Because I made you.
Oh, okay.
I used the voice on
Wait,
it.
Wait, did you just freaking Bene Gesserit? Oh, you Bene Gesserit witch!
Yeah, that's me.
All right, so that's the podcast for today.
Mm-hmm.
Please, guys, I have been a very silly boy, and I've been giving you the wrong Twitter handle for us.
Oh my gosh, you have?
Yeah, I've been saying what our my Twitter handle actually is at my underscore Dune. At my underscore Dune. Not whatever else I said, which I think was probably Dune at Dune Girlfriend. That's not it. It's at my underscore Dune.
No, you always say at my underscore Dune.
Oh, I do? Okay, cool. Well, good. That's the Twitter. Please, if you enjoy these podcasts, rate us. On whatever your podcatcher is, give us 5 stars or whatever the equivalent is if you like us. And if you don't, you know, maybe just take that little criticism, put it in your pocket.
Save it for a rainy day.
Sure. And then what's the other thing? Tell your friends about us. Please do that. That's very important. And join our Facebook group,
MGBRD can
o?
Apostrophe
no
o,
no no can o apostrophe worms. Worms. Yep. So it's MGBRD can of worms. And you can you know, talk about talk with my buddy Hart and Katie and a couple of other friends that are already talking on there.
They are?
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Yeah. Well, I...
somebody should tag me so I pay attention.
All right, I'll tag you. And
I don't think that's a cockroach.
I don't think it is either. I can't tell what the fuck it is, though. It's some kind of crazy thing. We're just both watching this bug that's probably came in from outside. And so, yeah, that's, and thanks for being with us, guys. I hope you enjoyed the podcast, and we'll talk to you later. Bye.
Okay, love you. Bye.
Bye.